Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. They serve as public stewards, volunteering their time to investigate the actions of local government agencies and ensuring your tax dollars are spent wisely. Each year, the members of Sacramento County's grand jury take on a huge responsibility of monitoring the performance of the county's many agencies, investigating complaints, compiling in-depth reports to provide solutions to improve county services and enhance the quality of life for residents. So if this sounds like a challenge you're up for, the opportunity has arrived. Sacramento County is currently accepting applications for those interested in becoming members of the grand jury. Joining us now to provide more details on the grand jury's role and responsibilities is Judge Stephen Gerviser with the Sacramento County Superior Court and the supervising judge for the grand jury. Judge Gerviser, welcome to Insight. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
So there may be a couple of us who may not entirely understand what grand juries are and what they do. So let's start off with an intro 101 about what the Sacramento County does and how it serves the community.
All right. So the grand jury serves as an independent taxpayer's watchdog. So the grand jurors are empowered by statute to investigate, gather evidence, and publish reports regarding waste, abuse, and inefficiencies in local government, public agencies, or with respect to local public officials. And they can respond to citizen complaints, or they can investigate matters based upon their own exercise of their discretion. It's important to remember that this is an independent group of citizens. We're not talking about a state agency or a state bureaucrat. This is the democratic process. We have volunteers that are volunteering for a one-year period to engage in this very important process.
What do you think is most misunderstood about grand juries? Do you think sometimes they get lumped into trial juries?
Yes, they do. And I think usually if we hear in the news, we hear somebody was indicted by a grand jury. But what we do here, so that's one issue, is our grand jury work is mostly non-criminal. We're looking at different agencies that are ineffective or inefficient. For example, a water district that is not following water standard guidelines, or a city that's not following election laws. Or during COVID, the grand jury issued reports about the spending of COVID money. So they are looking mostly at government agencies, local government agencies. It could be jails, like the main jail, or RCCC, school districts, special districts, of which we have many. So the scope of authority is broad, and it's different than a regular jury, because in a regular jury, everything is in public. When you come to a trial in my department, it's open to the public, complete transparency, and jurors serve for one particular case. But for the grand jury, it's a one-year term, and everything they do is confidential until they release their report. And that way, nobody can bother them, nobody can influence them, and they can maintain their independence and anonymity until they release the report. Once they release the report, then the target of the report is required to respond.
What I found so surprising is that the grand jury, they're volunteers. They volunteer their time for this work, making sure that county agencies and the county is functioning as intended. So who are these volunteers? What kind of applicant pool are you receiving? Because it is now open for people who want to volunteer and be a part of the grand jury.
Yes. And one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you is we want to encourage people from all our diverse neighborhoods in Sacramento County to apply, because for two reasons. One, we know that drawing from a broad cross-section of the community is a formula for better group decision-making. And two, the grand jury is the voice of the entire community, not the voice of one particular neighborhood or group. Just like if you were to see a jury render a verdict in my courtroom, if they look like Sacramento County, it commands more credibility to the public. So we want to encourage people to apply. And we have such a diverse workforce here in Sacramento County, all different public agencies. We've got retired doctors, lawyers, custodians, people that have the time, because it takes about 20 hours a week, sometimes more, especially when they're writing their report. So we have people from all over the county with a very high diversity with respect to backgrounds and education and experience. And that creates a really good pool of people to look at state, look at local government. So we get incredibly talented people.
Given that you've been a judge in the county since 2012, but you were appointed as a supervising judge for the grand jury in January of 2021, so you have at least a year under you seeing what these volunteers, what this grand jury accomplishes. What stands out to you about them?
What stands out to me is their dedication and their intellect. They really dig deep and find really interesting issues. And what really was important to me is that they're a catalyst for change. Once they release their, for example, with the water district, they released the report. The water district fired its attorney and hired new leadership. Once they released their report on the election law, the city that they were targeting complied with election law and appointed a person to the vacant city council position. So they do have an impact, and they're very dedicated. And it's just a joy to work with them, because it's nice to see people giving back to their community.
What are the requirements to be selected?
The requirements are the same for any jury service. You have to be 18 years or older. You have to be a citizen. You have to be a U.S. citizen, a citizen of Sacramento County for 1 year. And you have to have sufficient understanding of English. Those are the minimum requirements.
Given...
Can I do one plug?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And that is, for folks that want to apply, you can go to your search engine and put in Sac County Grand Jury, or go to www.sacgrandjury.org. And we have a user-friendly website. And you can do two things with that. One is apply. And two, if you wish to file a complaint, you can do that anonymously through the website. And we get a lot of tips that way.
What is the application process like? I mean, it's user-friendly. You can go to the county website, and we have that link on our Insight page as well to make it easy to get to. But say if you call someone and you're interested in them becoming part of the grand jury, what is that process like? What can people expect, or what should they know?
Okay, what they should know is last year we had about 100 applications. The first thing we do is we do a background check, and then we do interviews. Every applicant is interviewed by the Grand Jury Association, and these are going to be folks that have served on the grand jury. I get the notes from the interviews, and we try to find people from various backgrounds so that they're not all retired teachers or all retirement correctional people. We narrow it down to about 40 to 50 people, and then there's a random drawing. And the random drawing is to select 19 serving jurors and 11 alternates. So it's quite a good process. We do a lot of vetting and pay close attention to people's backgrounds and experience.
Yeah, and in addition to them being volunteers, the public also plays a huge role in helping launch grand jury investigations. When should people file a complaint with the grand jury, and how can they do so?
All you need to do is go to the website, SacGrandJury.org, or just type in Sacramento County Grand Jury, or even if you go to Sacramento Superior Court, we have a banner that'll lead you right to the grand jury website, and it's very simple. Go right on there to complaints, and if you have a complaint, I would say go there today. We want the information. It's very helpful. It gives the grand jury a head start on possible problems or issues that really need some more investigation.
Judge Gerverser, thank you so much for explaining what is just such an important and significant public service. for Sacramento
County. Thank you so much for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
And that is Judge Stephen Gerviser, a Superior Court judge for Sacramento County and the supervising judge for the county's grand jury. For those interested in applying or just getting more information, we have a link set up on our Insight page. Up next, we're going to sit down with Mayor Daryl Steinberg to take a look back at 2022 and the challenges that will carry over into the new year. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. Well, when we slow down and take stock of 2022, a lot happened this year. Like most places, Sacramento was hoping to move forward after 2 years of the pandemic and all of the economic challenges to get up and running again with a vibrant downtown. But a mass shooting in the city center back in April, followed by another deadly shooting in downtown, both outside nightclubs, shook a feeling of safety as families mourned senseless loss. Meantime, the crisis of homelessness remains front and center in Sacramento and across the state, as well as an ongoing affordable housing crunch. But out of tragedy and challenges comes change. There's a renewed focus on safety and security, including a new police chief. Voters approved a measure billed as a tool to help curb and help those unhoused. And continuing on the bright side, we've had some few and far between wins and underdog stories that spark the spirit of one of the most diverse places in all of California. Joining us now is Mayor Daryl Steinberg to talk all things Sacramento with hindsight and an eye towards the future. Good morning, Mayor.
Great to be with you, Vicki.
Well, in a word or two, I mean, we were talking about this just like the Insight team putting together, you know, just kind of taking stock of 2022. So much has happened. How do you reflect on the past, 11 months?
Another challenging year that ends with great hope. Mm-hmm. I always believe the glass is half full. And that's so true of Sacramento. We've been through some unprecedented challenges, COVID, but now beyond COVID. That, by the way, all of our challenges are not unique to Sacramento. These are issues: public safety, homelessness, the great economic divide, which we don't talk enough about, that are present in most every major American city. But Sacramento is tough. We're resilient, and we've ended the year with some significant achievements that give me great hope for 2023.
One of the most recent changes, and we can just get to the midterm, was that city voters approved Measure O, and that was arguably one of the more controversial measures on the city ballot for this election cycle. You were in support of it, but you said it wasn't perfect. How do you explain Measure O to the city and also to the county, because there's a partnership component? What can residents expect when it comes to the crisis of homelessness?
Well, in the end, I did favor Measure O, but for one real reason, and that is that we made it contingent on the city and the county entering into a legally binding partnership agreement to address the crisis together. And the key word is together. And just this week, last Tuesday, both the city and county unanimously approved this unprecedented partnership agreement. I think it's a breakthrough because it isn't just an aspiration. It's actually very specific. We are going together to have 10 teams attacking in a humane way 20 major tent encampments every month in Sacramento with a health and human services approach to actually intervening with people, diagnosing them, whatever their problem or condition is, on the street. And then the legal obligation of the county is to do whatever it takes, including adding whatever number of wraparound service slots are necessary for people to get out of homelessness. We have not had this kind of strategic approach with the city and the county actually working together. The city is going to pay for half the outreach workers. The county is paying for the mental health clinicians. And then the health plans under this new state reform, CalAIM, is going to pay for a number of outreach workers as well. The combination of this strategic intensive outreach and the obligation to do whatever it takes to help people in need gives me more hope than I've had in a long time.
We have, you and I, and also the whole city, have talked about the issue of those, of the unhoused community, those experiencing homelessness, and solutions for years. Why did it take a measure on the ballot to actually get a partnership between the county and the city?
Well, the measure on the ballot was a part of it. There's no question. But I will say, for myself as mayor of the city, I've been pushing this partnership for 6 years and have been advocating for a long time. This idea that this is a complicated issue, but sometimes we need to step back and simplify it. I say that everyone ought to have a legal right to housing, a legal right to mental health care if they have mental health problems, a legal right to substance abuse treatment, and people ought to have a legal obligation to accept that help when it is offered. And sometimes real achievement requires a lot of underlying struggle along the way. If it were easy, it probably would have been done 4 or 5 years ago. But this has been a journey. Measure O was part of it. It was not the only piece of it. Certainly the business community demanded action. I think that in the end was a good thing. But so have the activists, and so has the larger community. It has taken some time, but this is the first of its kind in the state. There is no voluntary, legally binding agreement between cities and counties that actually specify roles, that actually require action. And I'm hopeful that this will be a model for the rest of the state.
There wasn't a funding component attached to the measure, though, and the city has forecasted a multi-million dollar deficit for homeless shelter funding, which also risks the shelter spaces that are available, which also fall short of the number of people who need access to shelter. What is the plan to manage this financially?
Well, first of all, the city, when I started as mayor, we had less than 100 beds in safe spaces a night. We're now up to over 1,100 a night. And so the city, which is not a health and human services agency, we're not a homeless agency, we've done more thanks to my colleagues and the city team and the community than ever before. But the power of the partnership agreement with the county is that the county is the health and human services agency. And it's not just county dollars. The health plans now under this CalAIM reform are actually going to be responsible for a significant portion of this problem. And so we are much better and stronger financially working together, because the city in some ways has reached its limit. 1,100 beds is a lot. It's not enough. And now with the partnership, the county can employ its Proposition 63 money, the Mental Health Services Act, the measure I authored back in 2004 as a state legislator, the tax on millionaires for mental health services. There's this CalAIM reform. The county is going to take a more significant responsibility for funding because they do health and human services.
When it comes to, when you're talking about this new component of actually going into encampments and helping people, getting them the help they need, which includes even diagnosing them on site, if they need to stay at that encampment for stability, because we're talking about mental health, how do you square these two ideas?
Well, first of all, the idea, the reason why the outreach is so important is that even with the county opening up a number of new, what they call core centers, clinics, that's wonderful. But people who are chronically homeless and ill are not going to get up and walk in on their own. It requires intensive community outreach that really is about trust building. Because when people are distrustful, when they're traumatized, when they're ill, it can require 3 weeks, 4 weeks, five, 6 weeks of day-to-day interaction before somebody feels like they can trust enough to want to come in. And that is the plan here. When I say 20 encampments a month, 50 new people, they are going to be asked, the encampment engagement teams, to spend a month in every one of these major tent encampments so that they can actually work to build the trust. This cannot be a flyby or a drive-by, and it won't be.
Y'all announced the county-city partnership agreement just, you know, a few days ago, less than a week ago. When does this begin? Does this kick off in January?
Now. In fact, implementation, of course, is everything. And I understand the public, which says, don't just tell me. And the piece of paper is great. And the agreement is great.
And the press conference and all that stuff.
But show me. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I'm very pleased about, and I give the county a lot of credit here. I think they stepped up big time. We've had our history and difficulties and challenges together, but they've stepped up here. And so together, the city and the county have actually stood up the first two of the 10 encampment engagement teams, and they're out this week intervening in a couple of the priority sites. The city is going to determine the priority sites. But think about the math just for a moment. If we can do 20 sites per month over the course of a year, you know, give or take, we don't want to overpromise. Mm-hmm. We can get to 100, 150, maybe 200 encampments with a humane approach that doesn't preclude enforcement, because where people are engaging in illegal activity, we need to enforce the law. And in the end, if we can't get everybody out of the encampments, the county has to consider their tools, which allow them to bring people into treatment involuntarily. But in the end, we can get thousands of people off the street and have a cleaner and safer city.
In the new year is when you're talking about all this, it also comes with new leadership in various levels. And you've not only been mayor, you've been a city council member, you've worked at the state capitol. So you're very familiar with our area in the realm of elected office. We're not only going to have a new DA, a new sheriff. This year we had a new police chief in the city of Sacramento. And the city council next year is going to be majority female for the first time ever, I believe, in this city history.
That's a great thing.
So how do you take all of that in terms of solutions and change for 2023, given that the leadership of Sacramento at a county and city level is going to look drastically differently? It's a new chapter or era.
We're going to lose some veteran members of the city council, for example, but I think new energy, new ideas, a majority women city council is a great thing. And it speaks to the values of Sacramento. We're inclusive, we're diverse. And I'm looking forward to working with the new group because, you know, here's the thing about politics. No matter where you serve, we hold these offices temporarily. We hold them in trust for the people that we represent. Nothing's permanent. And so it's a good thing that we have some new blood. I'm looking forward to working with the new council and the new DA and sheriff, because I think change there is important as well. And look, we have a lot of issues that affect public safety and homelessness, which is why, again, the city, you know, everyone looks to the city because everyone knows their mayor. But really, the city does not run the county jail, where a lot of people are released from jail and then put out to the street without any kind of services. That needs to change. And I'm hopeful with the new leadership that there's going to be an opportunity to look at some of these issues fresh and to work closer together.
When Sacramento Police Chief Kathy Lester was sworn in I believe March of this year, a month later, the city had its first mass shooting in modern city history, followed by another deadly shooting also outside a nightclub not too long after. You know, what has changed most under Chief Lester's leadership in less than a year, about 9 months, with these challenges?
Well, she is a great police chief. I mean, what I really appreciate about her is that she has a vision for actually improving public safety over the long term. Her focus, for example, on the zip codes in the city where crime is the highest and making sure that we're flooding the zone in the right way. to bring the resources to reduce those rates. And just her transparency and the way that she relates to the community and to the city has been refreshing. Daniel Hahn was the same way, by the way. But Chief Lester brings her own really positive style. But here's the thing. Those were terrible tragedies. But, you know, gun violence is actually down in Sacramento 2022 from 2021. We actually have had fewer victims. Now, one victim is too many. And what happened downtown rightfully shocked people and scared people. But, you know, we've hired now a full-time, nighttime manager at the city.
Tina Lee Vogt.
Tina Lee Vogt, very well respected. And we are really trying to not only upgrade the security provisions that we already had in place, but to make sure there's more uniformity and that we're doing everything we can to keep people safe. I'll say this. You go downtown and midtown on any weekend evening, and what I see, because I'm down there a lot, are a lot of people and a lot of families and a lot of restaurants where you've got to, you know, it's sometimes hard to get a reservation because people are still coming downtown. We have a lot of work to do. And certainly the fact that the workers, both state and city workers, are mostly working from home is a continuing challenge. But the glass is half full here. We don't put our head in the sand about the challenges and the problems we have, but we have to be positive and we have to continue to work to bring downtown and our entire city back.
Both of these shootings, I mean, one argument was that it received a lot of attention because it happened in the city center. But, you know, these issues are longstanding and they impact our most underserved neighborhoods. A component of this is youth funding. In your State of the City address back in June, you announced a $50 million youth sports complex in the neighborhood of Meadowview. Now, at that time, whether the city could use the hotel tax was in question, but voters passed Measure N, also in the midterm, which gives a little more flexibility in spending. What are the updates on this? I mean, that's a pretty significant amount of money, and the youth sports complex sounds wonderful. What is the status on this?
Well, the election was really positive, I think, overall. First of all, the voters of Sacramento passed Measure L, which will provide $10 to $12 million of additional funding for youth programs and youth services. Measure N was the sleeper of the election cycle. No, hardly anyone really understood what it was, but it may be the most significant thing we did on this year's ballot because the voters have now said we can use our tourism dollars, our hotel tax dollars, for anything beyond convention centers and theaters that promote tourism. And so what are we going to do beginning in 2023? I'm focused on two big things. Number one, we're going to follow through. I'm working with Councilmember Mai Vang in the community. We are going to build an iconic regional youth sports facility on those 102 acres in Meadowview. And we have the money to do it. We have over $100 million of debt capacity. Second thing, we're going to use some of that money to go back to what we were planning to do prior to COVID, and that is revitalize the old Sacramento waterfront. I want to build a modern waterfront to keep all that's great about old Sacramento, but make it an even cooler destination for people and to use the water itself in ways that bring the river alive. And so that was one of the victories. And in 2023, we now actually need to start working towards the development and construction of at least these two major initiatives.
One last two things on the city, and then we're going to get to some celebrating the good things that have happened this year. One of the most controversial moments for the city council was Councilmember Sean Lalowey, the investigation surrounding his residency. It was an independent investigation. Councilmember was cleared. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think that transparency and the process is very, very important. I think there were serious questions raised about Councilmember Lalowey's residency. And so my experience, and I've had too much experience in dealing with these sorts of issues as Senate leader and throughout my career, is that you put forward an independent process and an independent investigation. And that's exactly what we did. And the investigation came back and said he meets the residency requirement. And to me, That satisfies me. Councilmember Lilloe is hardworking. He's trying to do his very best for District 2. And now that that has been settled, at least with the independent investigation, I want to do everything I can to help him and help the residents of District 2 get what they need, because that's a part of town that needs a lot of attention. But go Pacers. Grant High School, by the way, in the state championship game in District 2. I'm really proud of Grant High.
The two of you also can have some passionate discourse during city council meetings as well.
Oh, Councilmember Lilloe and I have gotten into it a couple times. I get into it with all my colleagues, but if you're not passionate, then you probably should pick another line of work, because this is the issues are important and serious, and passion is a good thing. And you know what? We're like a family at that place, right? Maybe sometimes a tiny bit dysfunctional, but we all work together, and you know, we all want what's best for the city.
Lastly, a position that has a lot of power and influence, but doesn't, you know, not. It may not as be publicly known as city manager, and that comes down to Howard Chan. You know, he received a rise in his salary over the last 6 years, I believe 42% since he was appointed city manager back in 2017. His salary went from $282,000 to $400,000, and that has received some criticism. I mean, how do you justify a significant raise over the last several years?
Well, Howard is one of the hardest working people I have ever met in my life. I mean, it's almost a 24-hour-a-day job. And, you know, under our system, the mayor is the leader of the city, but the city manager is the leader of the city government and manages thousands of people. He does a great job. And I'm supportive of him, you know, very supportive. In fact, I don't like this system of government, as I've been clear. I wish the voters someday, won't be under my tenure, would look at creating a more modern form of government with more executive leadership. But under this form of government, I couldn't ask for a better partner, you know, and there's history where managers and mayors have not gotten along well together. Howard and I work together very, very well, and we sometimes disagree, but that's okay. Our partnership is really important as we move this city forward.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio, and we're talking with Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg. So one of the city's major landmarks from the past is no more, ARCO Arena. What is the future of ARCO Arena in the Natomas area? And are plans still underway to bring California North State University there?
Well, just like the homeless partnership agreement we talked about, sometimes the best things require some time and some struggle to get to the right place. And so back when the city council approved the Golden One Center, and I was Senate pro tem at the time, there was a promise made to the people of Natomas that ARCO would be replaced by something that would create jobs and that would be a vital part of the community. So it's taken some time, but North State Hospital and the city and the Kings continue to work towards the fulfillment of that vision, which is a teaching hospital, obviously a major medical center, and it's progressing. It's complicated, obviously, and a major project, but it's on its way. And I hope that 2023 will bring, you know, some either further progress and maybe some shovels in the ground.
While Natomas has these gains, there's also Land Park, which will be saying goodbye to the zoo. It's going to go to the city of Elk Grove.
Not for a while.
Not for a while. I mean, is there talks, though, about, I mean, it's such a wonderful piece of the city, a fairy tale town and the park and a golf course. What's going to go there at the Sacramento
Zoo? And I know people have mixed feelings about this. Mm-hmm. You know, on the one hand, the zoo has been a very special part of Land Park, but the site's too small. And I'm a regionalist. I think borders and boundaries, a city, you know, I'm proud of my city, but I also believe in the region. And this will be good for the region, including the people of Sacramento. But now we have an opportunity and an obligation to envision what that site could be. I mean, and there's a lot of talk, botanical gardens or, you know, another kind of public, you know, public amenity. It's time to use 2023 to imagine what that could be and then follow through and do it. And maybe with Measure N again, where we now have the ability to use available money, capital money. We have over $100 million that without raising a dime of additional taxes on the hotel tax side, maybe we can begin thinking about that side as well in 2023.
On the sports front, we've had some wonderful underdog stories this year, from Sacramento Republic FC to the Sac State Hornets, which are still in the playoffs. And even the Kings are off to one of their best starts in years. What does that do for the city? I know you've been at some of the games as well.
I've been to a couple of Kings. First of all, I'm a Kings diehard, always have been. And my opinion is that you stay with your team through thick and thin. And it's been a little thin over the past decade and a half. But now to see the team doing so well and the great coach and Mike Brown and star players, I'm really, really excited. And you know what? It's not the most important thing in the world, but it does actually make a difference in terms of the community's mood and the way we feel. I think my approval rating goes up 2 points every time the Kings win three games. Just kidding. But it's really a good thing. The other thing I want to say, I'm so proud of Sac State.
I know.
Are you kidding?
Record attendance.
Undefeated. I mean, you should see, I went out there Saturday. There were people out there with their umbrellas, and it was cold. And now another big game Friday night. And then I want to say this. I'm really proud of the Republic FC. Oh, my God. The joy that they gave us. You know, Kevin Nagel, Todd Donovan, the entire organization in getting to the final of the Lamar Hunt Cup. And I'm not overpromising, but I'm telling you this. Tell your listeners this, Vicky. We have not given up on Major League Soccer. This is a deserving city. We deserve this. And even though it's been very quiet, we continue to work hard on making sure that Sacramento gets its due and gets its fair shake.
Finally, Mayor, you have 2 years left on your term and you can't run for re-election. You've already served at the state capitol. You've worked for city government. Want to break any? What are you thinking about after 2024?
Well, there are no term limits. There actually are no term limits. I'm thinking about my future.
So you may run.
I'm leaving all possibilities open at this point. I'm thinking about my future. I'm 63 years old now, 63 years young. I've been serving the community for almost 30 years. And all I want to do in my life are things that are meaningful, that matter, that help people, and that are fun. And so I'll be thinking about it over the next number of months, and we will see. But if it ended tomorrow, for me, it would have been an incredible run. And I just want to use this year, 2023, let's just break through. Let's have some big wins for Sacramento. And our conversation next year at this time should be about all the great things we did together.
Mayor Steinberg, thanks for making the trip. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. Happy holidays, Vicky.
Happy holidays to you as well. Still ahead, a new Cap Radio podcast uncovers extraordinary stories of women in the music industry who've carved a path to success despite the odds. We'll meet the artists behind a music of their own. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Music is powerful. It's transformative. It can spark movement, change, and touch our soul. But as an industry, it has long been dominated by men. A new Cap Radio podcast uncovers the stories of women who have carved a path to success despite the odds. Joining us today is Majel Connery, the host and producer of A Music of Their Own. Majel is a vocalist, composer, and musicologist, making unique sounds of electro dream pop with classical influences, and applies this experience and extensive academic career into the podcast series to highlight the extraordinary women in the music industry. The first season is highlighting the accomplishments of women at the top of their field in classical works, an industry where only 12% of the music programmed by American orchestras over the last year was written by women. So, Majel, thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Vicky.
I listened to the first episode. Congratulations. It's wonderful. And I'm happy it's finally, it's seeing fresh air for all to listen to. I'm curious, You know, you have such an extensive career and, you know, wide range of experience. How did you gravitate towards music in the first place? And what were your initial aspirations just for hopping into the music field and the industry?
Well, I was an only child for the first 6 years of my life, and I did not like to play with toys. I also didn't like to sweat. So the only thing that was left was the piano in my living room. And after I discovered the piano, I really never stopped making or consuming music. But by the time I was in my late teens and my early 20s, some bad things happened to me. There was an illness, some professional disappointments, and I just lost my nerve as a performer and went into a desert for a few years. I went to grad school instead. I got a degree in musicology, which I love. But in my heart of hearts, I wasn't fulfilled in the way I thought I could be. So in 2015, I left a pretty cool career in academia to get back into professional music. But 20 years later, I was a really different person than I was in my early 20s, and I had totally lost a sense of what my art was. Like, what did I have to offer the world as an adult? And it has taken me until 2020 to feel like these pieces of me are finally settling into place again. And this podcast is a big part of that.
Yeah, I mean, you have these two loves. How did you balance the two from academia, musicology, and actually pursuing a career as an artist and a musician?
Yeah, I think I have two sides, a sort of like a sedate, nerdy side that likes books and quiet time. And then I also have a side that likes to be really rowdy and loud. And I've always been torn between these two things. I love talking about music. I like ideas. And this is one of the reasons why doing this podcast has been so fulfilling. This podcast is not just a series of interviews like, how did you get into music? It's curious. It's verbal. It's telling stories and solving problems. But on the other hand, my heart is about making music, and I can't live without that. So in my other life, I also compose music, and I have a number of big projects as well. So I live a dual life, and that seems to work.
Well, one of your latest musical projects was Sky Creature, and that incorporates post-punk, trance, and opera. I love the three of those, but we're going to take a quick listen to see what post-punk, trance, and opera sounds like. I just love the diversity in musical styles. How did this project develop?
Trained as an opera singer, so this represents a real right turn for me, and that has been thrilling. I have discovered as I get older that the harder the path I have to tread to get somewhere, the more rewarding it is, and I think everybody can relate to that. So for this project, when I'm on the road, I'm sleeping terribly and the shows are unpredictable. And sometimes there's only 20 people there. Sometimes there's 4,000. We're in a different city every night. But that part is wonderful. And then the making music part is equally challenging. My bandmate is a seasoned producer of rock records and he's in the rock industry himself. And so every day I am being challenged to sing in a way that I'm totally not trained to sing and totally not comfortable with. And he works me pretty hard. But at the end of these hard rehearsal days, I've confronted what I think are limitations in myself and tried to overcome them. And there's literally nothing more rewarding.
And I would imagine, I mean, you went through a 42 U.S. city tour for Sky Creature, and it was grueling and rewarding and fun as well. But I would imagine you got a deeper look into how the country looks at women in music.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not a surprise that I started a podcast about women in music at around the same time I was starting to be the front woman for a band. There is an incredible deficit of women in music. And in 2022, people might be surprised or even shocked by this. I am. We rarely played with bands that had a single woman in them, which is just shocking. There are also a lot of times where I have to impersonate my bandmate, who is a man, on email just to get a response from a booker or a venue or a manager. And to be totally honest with you, Vicky, I do a lot of intentional flirting with managers, with bookers, with technical directors, with bartenders, because this is a tool I have that can get us things. I get money this way a lot of times. I will flirt with somebody over email and the check will show up in the mail. I feel conflicted about this and I don't know if it's a tool I should be using. This is something that we talk about on the podcast. This is an ongoing concern and I'm super curious to know what other women think about this. Is it okay to use your sex or your attractiveness as part of your professional appeal?
What I love about the podcast and Music of Their Own is that it really sounds like when you're sitting in a living room talking to peers in your field, and it's so intimate and vulnerable, even having conversations like that, which are all lived experiences, but getting them out and discussing it with your colleagues and peers in the music industry. Where did the inspiration for this podcast begin?
Yeah, I totally agree, Vicky. There's a kind of strengthening resolve that comes just from knowing that someone else shares a similar story.
You're not alone.
And that's like, yeah, that's like, that is the glue of this podcast. So I started doing these interviews at a very, very low point for me personally. I was sitting in my house in the Bay Area, like a lot of us, during the pandemic. It was too smoky to go outside. I had zero job opportunities and no income. And it was COVID on top of everything. And this was the stretch of time when, like, nobody had any sense of how long this was going to go on. I was going out of my mind. So I did something I've never done before. I reached out to a bunch of people in the music industry who seemed like they had their act together. And I just begged them to have a conversation with me along the lines of, hey, you seem like you're doing well. What should I be doing that I'm not doing? And these conversations were really comforting because nobody out there felt like they had their act together. They all felt like they were flailing. And that was comforting. But then there was a pivot point where at a certain point, I realized I had not interviewed a single woman. And I was shocked and floored. And I realized I really needed to do something about this. I needed to know more women. So I reached out to a bunch of friends of mine, mostly women, to find out where all the women were. And I made a list. And at this time, I was also talking to Kevin Daugherty at Cap Radio about the possibility of turning these conversations into an edited, produced podcast. And as I started interviewing these women, we shaped them together. The team at Cap Radio got behind me, and the rest is history.
Yeah. What has been the most rewarding piece of this journey and this experience now that it's coming to fruition and the podcast launches today? How do you reflect on this journey?
Honestly, Vicky, this is going to sound like I'm saying something that isn't true, but this podcast has changed my life. The women on this podcast are the most relentlessly positive, forward-thinking, joyful people I have ever met. And seeing them model that kind of behavior in spite of all the crap that has also happened to them has been so inspiring for me. When you have a model, someone who is doing the sorts of things you want to do and is acting in the way that you want to act, suddenly it seems a lot easier for mm-hmm. you to do it too. And so these women have become my heroes and my mentors, even though some of them are younger than me. And talking has been an improvement in my general attitude toward everything. And that in turn has changed my career. Like literally what I am doing now is 100% different than it was 2 years ago. And I really honestly have this podcast and these women to thank for it.
And we're talking, I mean, this podcast series, the first season is really focusing on classical music. But what you are saying transcends even music. I mean, this could be applied to many different industries, journalism included. Finally, in the last, 30 seconds we have, what do you hope listeners take away from these conversations who will be taking in this this podcast starting today about these extraordinary women?
Well, two things. One is I hope that listeners to CAP Radio, even people who don't think they like classical music, will listen to the extraordinary music that these women are making and realize, wait, hang on, this is classical music? I can really get behind this stuff. It's beautiful. I guess I'm a fan of classical music because classical music is a living, breathing organism. It's being made today. And I don't think most people realize this. But the second thing is, like you were saying earlier, Vicky, this transcends music. It is a lesson for all women and all people. We can all relate to these stories on some level. We have confronted the same issues. We have taken risks. We have stumbled. We've picked ourselves back up. And having this kind of group conversation about shared experiences is amazing.
Majel Connery is the host and producer of A Music of Their Own, the latest podcast from CAP Radio. And with that, that's Insight for today.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.